Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I've had one too many cigarettes burning up my lungs. Had to taste the one too many lips hanging off my tongue. Oh, oh, oh. Sunday morning getting high, drinking here alone. Thinking up a brand new alibi for not coming home. Oh, oh.
People who, like the founder of the show, recognize they're on a dangerous path and make the difficult adjustment to be an amazing person. Share poems that reveal the duality of our vulnerability and strength. Capture the internal battle of the demon and angel on your shoulders. Deep poetry, thoughtful commentary, and fun chatter for sinners, saints, and everyone in between. This is part sinner, part saint, part of Late Night Poets on allpoetry.com. You don't have to be a part of the group to participate, but it's more fun if you are, because you can follow along in the chat, reading with us, and commenting. I'm Faziana. Babbler is away this week, but we have the lovely Pam Ray. Welcome, Pam.
Hiya, Faziana. How's it going?
Pretty good. I'm glad to have you here. It is so hot, though. I was supposed to be camping this weekend. Originally, Pam was going to be filling in for me, and then we couldn't handle being outside. It's too much. Actually, today is not as bad as it has been. I think it was 36 degrees my way, so that for you, that would be considered 96. But then in Lytton, which is not too far from me, It was 49 there, Celsius, which means 120.2 Fahrenheit. Like, that is
nuts. That's inhumane. That's,
right?
It makes you think a portal to hell opened up or something.
Well, for real. And they've had major fires the last couple of years where they've lost quite a bit. So that's always a big risk when it's this hot. There's also dry lightning storms. So it's just, I don't know. We did not brave the camping. We'll do fall and winter camping because we're crazy like that. But today, no.
Yeah.
We weren't going to do it. How about you?
Well,
what are you up to, Pam?
not a whole lot. Just, you know, usual writing, cleaning, you know, kind of one of those days where it was a nice balance of getting things done, but still finding time to rest and relax and, you know, all kinds of, you know, just good, simple stuff. And, you know, all good. So definitely looking forward to tonight's poetry. Looks like you got a great lineup.
We do. Quite a bit of it is carryovers from Babbler's contest that we did last week. It had been one of those situations where we had a contest that didn't have very many entries, and we're like, oh, well, you know, why don't we do a follow-up one that's on the same kind of topic and open it up some more? And then all of a sudden we had so many wonderful entries that, you know, we couldn't pick between them, so we had to do two nights' worth. And I'm always happy to have those extras because it's great to see that enthusiasm. Contest, yeah, I mean, it's so good to see so many people writing. Last week's that we're carrying over is from the contest Straight and Narrow, which had a few little images and then some quotes. So the prompts were, on the straight and narrow path, there are simply no corners to be cut. I like people who straight up tell me their shit, tell me how it is, and stop beating around the bush. One cannot think crooked and walk straight. And then there's pictures of, like, a straight jacket and the little street sign. And it's just, there's many different ways this could be interpreted. And just the idea that there are, you know, there's different interpretations, and it's going to be fun. So wide variety of poems in response to that. Oh, and I see we have a caller. One second. Hello, welcome to Part Sinner, Part Saint. Who has joined us?
Hello, I'm Emmy.
Hi, Emmy. Good to hear you again.
Hi. Yeah, well, good to hear you, too. Long time no see.
Two shows in a row, I love it. Do you have an entry? I can bump you up to the beginning. I gotta look. Was there one?
Who, me?
Yeah.
I don't think I entered, no.
Okay, well, that's just fine.
There was one I was meaning to enter into, but I think I missed the date, so I ended up not doing it.
That's okay. You can be here for the ride. Our first entry is by Darkened Auras, and it's called Straight and Narrow Curveball. They say my mind is twisted. They're trying to straighten it out. That is what this straitjacket is actually all about. I always choose the devil, and we laugh at angels' feet. I walked the straight and narrow road, but it led to deceit. I tried to be obedient, took beatings when they came, but you can only take so much before your thoughts don't stay the same. Thought I could curl up in a ball and I'd be left alone, but an accident from earlier had brought on her raging tone. She came back down for round two. I cried, begging her to stop. Grabbed the gun and pulled the trigger. Last thing I heard was a pop. Police were called from gunshot. I wore mother's blood like a second skin. I guess the lessons that she taught me were stomped out from within. End poem. And it says, not true, I have a wonderful mother. but I've also seen a lot of movies like this. So not to worry, the mother was not really killed. This is a work of fiction. Pam, would you like to start our comments?
Yeah, you know, I thought this was a wonderful work of fiction. You know, as always, I like the rhyme and flow to this. I like how she brings us into the mind of a killer and the idea of not just the moment that they pull the trigger, but the idea of how through their lifetime they've dealt with trying to be good, trying to be obedient, and eventually giving in to those dark thoughts, those raging tones. I really like the beginning. Plus, I also really like, thought I could curl up in a ball and I'd be left alone, but an accident from earlier had brought on her raging tone. She came back down for round two. I cried, begging her to stop. You know, and so it, I like how this goes deep into the idea of how oftentimes people who end up, you know, being serial killers or not even serial killers, some acts of violence oftentimes are because you don't feel like anyone else will protect you, and therefore you have to protect yourself. It's a powerful, dark, right, extremely visceral in its imagery and very well done.
Well said, Pam. I really liked the part where it said, where is it now? I wore mother's blood like a second skin. I guess the lessons that she taught me were stomped out from within. That stomped out from within really hits hard. It's like you, any good that was in there was bashed out. There's just, wow, it's quite the frightening scene. And it seems frightening both for the mother and for the murderer as well, because it seemed like a really bad situation to begin with, and then having that context of being in this straitjacket, we're telling the story, is it creates that intensity. Emmy, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I really specifically like the part on I wore mother's blood like a second skin. You get like the sense of metamorphosis and that this is something that kind of will change you, right? And it's sort of like the sense of like you can never go back. And I don't think that's often properly encapsulated in like a horror style of poetry like this. But I think the sense of maybe not guilt, but like, you know, acknowledgement of the crime in such a way is really impressive to me.
That's a good point. I really like that, how it has that transformative nature, and you're right. Often if we have encounter horror storytelling in poetry, it's more about the story, like the action and the story, rather than understanding the impacts, the way that it has that impact on the person and the emotional ramifications of that forever. So thank you for pointing that out. Pam, would you please read Metaphysical Migraines entry?
Absolutely, I would be happy to. All right, and here we go. Conviction or Confessions of a Convict by Metaphysical Migraine. Locked away in a lonely prison cell, I strayed with dreams of paradise, the place where liberties dwell, and not being a victim of my own device. I brought to mind memories of mirth. I try to color my clouds of doubt. I couldn't help but wonder my worth, as society, it seems, deemed me a lout. flouting the rules and breaking the laws, I thought was good fun at the time, but now conscience concentrates my cause as boredom bites and I pass my prime. I tried to deal with incarceration during the drowning dirge of my despair with lingering notations and meditation. It would certainly help if I didn't care. But feelings of guilt come knocking at my door, searching my soul for peace of mind. Even inside, I couldn't obey the law. As I looked for answers, I couldn't find. What will it be like now I'm released? Can I change to fit society's rules? Will I be forever a beast? Or can I escape this world of fools? End poem.
Thank you for that read. And thank you for sharing this poem with us, Metaphysical Migraine. I think this is a really powerful look at that process within prison of having to face yourself. But now conscience concentrates my cause as boredom bites and I pass my prime. There's so much within that. The alliteration grabbed me with the conscience concentrates cause and the boredom bites past prime. But then when you really think about it, I mean, these two lines are so key. Conscience overtaking you and being forced to concentrate on it for so much because there's really nothing else to do other than contemplate what you've done. And realize what you're missing out on as you pass your prime, as you miss those years, and you're left to think about what you did and why you did it and the impact that that had. That's some heavy stuff to put here. And the feelings of guilt came knocking at my door. And that idea that, you know, maybe at first it all seemed like fun and then now it has really crashed down and you can't escape it. In the AN, it says, a true story of so many moons ago and the memories or impressions that such a time for my crime left on my indelible mind. I'm still there sometimes locked away, but free with glee and gaiety that those eyes prize what they see. So the idea that, like, even once you are free, you're still sometimes mentally locked away because of that experience. So, wow, that's intense. Emmy, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, some of these lines actually remind me of, like, the Shawshank Redemption and the sort of institutionalized aspect where I forgot the name of the character, but he finally gets out of prison and sort of realized that, like, the world has kind of moved on without him and has this real sense of being completely out of place and that he got too used to, like, living within the walls of the prison. And so now it doesn't really have a place in the world, and it has a very, very sad ending to that particular story within, like, the movie. I'd definitely recommend watch it if you haven't, but I think there's also this tendency of prisons to really instill within their convicts this sense of, like, worthlessness that tends to perpetuate crime more than it actually prevents it, and that you kind of leave people stuck in that for a while. And so that's definitely some of the stuff that I thought about with this poem. It's a very, very powerful piece in that sense.
Well said. Great comment. Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, I think this is a wonderful write. I like how it takes a look at how oftentimes, you know, we look back at our past and hope, you know, we can learn from it, and but then, you know, wonder, you know, about ourselves and about, you know, about moving forward. You know, I think my roommate would really appreciate this poem. He actually, his cousin started a halfway house and a jail ministry about 15 years ago for this area. And my roommate does prison ministry, and he does volunteers at the for the halfway house. And, you know, because the people who are getting out of jail oftentimes need help with that transition, you know, and I really like, again, how this takes a look into the mind of someone and their own inner personal struggles. You know, their own despair. I really like the, as you mentioned, the alliteration in Boredom Bites and I Pass My Prime. Those lines after that, I try to deal with my incarceration during the drowning dirge of my despair with lingering notation and meditation. It would certainly help if I didn't care. And I think no matter what your situation in life, we all have felt at one time or another that it would be really nice if we didn't have to have feelings, you know, just because it hurts so much in the moment. You know, so I think this is just a very thoughtful and powerful write and very well done.
I agree. And sounds like your roommate's cousin is good. You know, there is that difficulty of rehabilitation where if you've been left to think that you're not of value or that you're somehow irredeemable, then trying to get back into things, it feels like you have no choice but to do bad things because what are you capable of? So it needed to be shown that, you know, there are still possibilities and there are positive ways that you can become part of the community again. So I'm happy to hear that initiatives are happening. I know when I was in university to be a librarian, some of the people who I went to school with were working in prison libraries, and it was really interesting how much the libraries are valued within there. I mean, not for everyone, but for people who are planning on getting out and changing themselves, then it can make a big difference. So.
Absolutely.
Emmy, would you read the poem by Beatnik?
Oh, yeah, sure. Let me just get ready real quick. Okay, so this is She Wears a Cross by Beatnik. She wears a cross around her neck to keep the demon hordes at bay. She reads from the good book to protect her soul from being captured and taken away. These evil entities want her because she dares resist. Until the day she passes, they will not desist. She knows she has her faith to combat the devil's minions. She has her God to arm her against Satan's dominion. She attracts the spirits of hell. Her beauty inspires their lust. But she'll never be a whore to hell. The devil's plan will be a bust. She is chased until she is crossed over to her heavenly home. Then she'll take a love that she can call her own. Until then, she thwarts the monsters that clamor all around her and lives one day at a time and finds her strength through prayer and poem.
Thank you for that read, and thank you for the poem, Beatnik. To me, this almost feels like a story of, like, mental illness with all of these demon minions kind of harassing her and feeling like she attracts the spirits of hell. I don't know. It could be taken in like a mystical way, or it could be that they're not literal demons, but you know, the things in her imagination, or it could be, you know, people that she attracts, the you know, destructive people, Although it looks like it was originally in the contest Dark Rhyming Fantasy, so maybe it was actually Demons. Yeah, it had a good rhyme scheme and a nice, why can't I think of the word? Meter. It had like a measured kind of feel to it that gave it a rhythm. Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, boy, you're getting some wonderful dark rites tonight. You know, this one definitely very haunting. I like how it seems to be about a battle between good and evil. You know, and I really like the meter, as you were mentioning, in the she attracts the spirits of hell, her beauty inspires their lust, but she'll never be a whore to hell. The devil's plan will be a bust. You know, it just really powerful lines in the whole idea of someone who seems to be constantly in a battle. So very well done.
Emmy, you read it for us. Would you also like to comment?
Yeah, I was sort of struck by the line, her beauty inspires their lust, which really reminded me of a lot of different themes. And I feel like I kind of agree that this could really mean a number of different things, from like sort of a, maybe a condition of psychosis or like an actual like dark fantasy thing. But when I think of like beauty inspiring lust, part of me thinks about just like more of a tendency for like objectification and so and so, so, and that there could be themes of like you could honestly go an even darker route with that if you want. But yeah, it was a lovely read. It rolled off nicely on the tongue. It was really easy for me to read. The rhythm was nice and so on. So I noticed that as well.
That line about her beauty inspiring lust made me think about in The Hunchback of Notre Dame, I'm thinking of the cartoon version because I'm a kid like that, where the priest guy, or bishop, I can't remember, he was some kind of religious authority, was singing about the evilness of Esmeralda, but really it was his own issues that he was singing against. Like he was hateful towards her because he thought that she was corrupting him, where his own lust was the problem. It wasn't that she was evil. So that scene, which I think represents a problem, you know, across many societies of you know, the objectification, like you said, where the women get blamed for inspiring lust rather than the men being blamed for not controlling themselves about those feelings. That line did bring up a lot of that.
I'm glad you actually mentioned that because that is a great comparison.
For the next poem, I have an audio, which is always nice. Mark Loopy gave us a recording for his poem. Let me just load that up here.
Archery practice. I'll stop if you insist, but I don't want to wait. I just want to twist around what's curved and straight, but not before I've kissed the target ruby gate. Then mind will fill with mist, pulses will insist, the body will grow hot. I will take my shot, the arrows never missed. End of poem.
So I'm going to read the AN out loud too. An innocent poem about daily archery practice, straight as an arrow, straight like sexuality. Those with corrupt or sexualized minds should read other poems, though this poem's definitely interested in the shortest route, as in, FYI, I always kiss the red center of the target before beginning practice. It's patent-pending Zen ritual. Something like that. End poem. I don't know. It definitely felt like it had some sexual undertones to me, even in the way that he voiced it, though his AN denies this. I'm curious how you interpret it. Emmy, what did you think?
Yeah, a similar thing. I think the part that's interesting to me is I just want to twist around what's curved and straight. And that kind of, oddly enough, it reminds me of ducks. Male ducks in particular that have like the kind of, the corkscrew.
Oh, yep.
Innocent poem about daily archery practice. Yeah, there's a lot of, it's definitely like a sexual poem. Definitely kind of has that, like, that interesting tone to it, I guess, is the way I would describe it.
I think so, too. I do quite a bit of archery. And while I understand the ruby could be the target, I'd never thought of it as a gate, a target ruby gate. I don't know. That seems to tell me it's a little different. Yeah, the body will grow hot. I will take my shot. I'm definitely picking up some sensuality here. So he's playing with us, although he says go read other poems. All right, maybe I'm just dirty-minded. Pam, what did you think?
Well, I'm sorry. I can't comment on this poem because my corrupt and sexualized mind is too busy reading other poems.
Oh, Pam, I should have known.
yep, exactly. No, I do like the metaphor and imagery in this. I like how it's about archery, but it does take on that tone of sexuality. You know, the idea of the target ruby gate, then mind will fill with mist, pulses will insist, the body will grow hot. I like how there's that buildup of intensity, the physical reaction. So definitely very clever in its wordplay and its double innuendos, and very well done.
To add, if I could add something, I think it's okay to write about physical activities and include sexual innuendos. In fact, one of my favorite shows ever, Revolutionary Girl Latina, had like these duels where people would put roses, like they would wear these roses in their pockets, and the goal of the duels was to use swords to basically cut the flower off or remove the flower. So it's sort of like a physical like deflowering, if you will, and that was very honest about its sort of sexual metaphors. And it was kind of commenting on that in a way that was sort of like criticizing that, so it took a much different angle. But I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing.
Very cool.
I agree. I never thought it was a bad thing for sure. But I find that really fascinating about the roses. I'm gonna have to look into that because I like historical stuff like that. There's this sword fighting tournament that I've been to a few times, the Tournament of Roses, but it's more like you if you, every time you win, you get roses that you give to someone who inspires you. So if you go as an audience, ask like the date really of someone in the fighting, then you get roses, which I've quite enjoyed because my husband fights. also, sometimes he ends up being the inspiration of one of his friends. If they don't have a lady there, then you get to like give your friend a bunch of roses. And so we end up with lots of roses. But I really like that idea of the it's not the deflowering thing that we got to experience, but I think that that sounds like a really interesting practice. I'd like to look into that. Thank you for sharing. And I just realized the one that I posted, we already read, because I remember talking about the title with you, Pam.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, you're right.
I don't remember when that was, but I remember discussing the title with you, so let's skip that for now. I think it was on last night's show, actually. Perhaps I put it on the wrong show. It was a good one, but we've already done it very recently. So I'm going to keep going down. And here we go. Mind and Action by R.G. Kimmel. Since the mind controls our actions, we cannot walk straight if we think crooked. End poem. Emmy, would you like to comment?
It's strange because it sort of reminds me of this bumper sticker. It's specifically an LGBT bumper sticker that says, "I'm so gay, I can't even drive straight." But very clever, very short. I think the whole like thinking crooked thing, one of the things that sort of reminds me of is like being drunk, which is more of a literal thing in that like if you're drunk, your vision tends to curve off to the left, or what's the other? I don't remember. I'm a little bit toasty myself. So that's kind of what I was thinking about, and in that case, it's actually very true. And that, like, you literally wouldn't be able to move straight in a straight line if your vision is sort of curving you one way or another through, like, certain influences of other drugs. But, yeah, that's what I was thinking.
That's interesting. Yeah. I mean, that's a literal interpretation, but it's so true. I don't even know the word for it, but I have issues because of a brain tumor. And so I tend to think that I'm falling over to the left, so I jerk to the right because I'm trying to stop myself from falling. But I've had physiotherapists and occupational therapists watch me, and they're like, "You were never leaning to the left. I only see you move right." So it's like you're thinking it, and so you move differently, but you're not actually falling over. So it's impossible to be balanced if you don't feel balanced. But I think it's also true of your thoughts, where you know, if you're not thinking clearly, if you're not in an orderly fashion being able to process things, then you end up behaving erratically as well. It's very succinct, but it does, make you think about things. Pam, what are your thoughts?
Well, I really like what both you and Emmy had to say. Emmy's mentioning that bumper sticker really cracked me up. I like how this, you know, this is a wonderful brevity all the way through, and I like how it speaks on the idea of how often, most of the time, you know, we think about something before we act. And I like that the word straight is put in quotation marks, you know, giving the thought to the idea that everybody has their own idea of what is crooked and why do we necessarily have to walk that straight path? Like, is it really a bad thing to go wandering? You know, well, one good thing, if you ever, here's a little tidbit to know. If you ever want to not be caught and killed by a Komodo dragon, you should run in a weaving back and forth motion because they can only run in two arms.
This is true.
So
and
yes.
Pam was so generous because she was in a tournament where she had to act as the Komodo dragon, and she shared this tip before her battle. You're letting the other team have an advantage, Pam.
Oh, I know. And she didn't even take advantage of it, though. I mean,
oh, I was disappointed in her for that. I mean, come on. You had to leave reference. I would have put it in there.
Those were fun tournaments because it was fun to learn about the different animals. I really enjoyed that. But this was an excellent remedy.
We all are now prepared for Komodo dragon attacks. So I still hope that it never happens. I'll think of you, Pam. I'll be lying there, paralyzed, thinking about you.
Yeah, right.
If you ever read that I died by a Komodo dragon, you'll know you were in my thoughts.
Well, I really appreciate that.
Pam, would you please read the poem by E.J. Cool?
I would be happy to. Tightrope by E.J. Cool. Your love is a tightrope I often walk, leaning from logic to impulse, with the landlocked grace of an albatross, turbulent takeoffs and tumultuous landings lead to a penalty of dull and mawkish misunderstandings. End poem.
Excellent read. And while I try to figure out what Penelope is, Emmy, would you comment first?
Yeah. When I read like your love is a tightrope I often walk, that's sort of instantly reminding me of like things like eggshells in a way, like really not knowing how to move, how to orient yourself, and sort of like worrying that you'll fall sorry, I lost my train of thought. But yeah, this was very good. I think it was sort of the last line, mawkish misunderstandings. I forgot what mawkish actually meant, but I think I'm catching more of like an obnoxious overtone. So there seems to be certainly a large amount of dissatisfaction present in this poem, and it managed to convey that with very few lines, which is definitely very impressive. I was actually meaning to go to bed soon, but I noticed that there was a poem by EJ coming up, so I decided to stay.
Definitely worth staying for. I looked up Panoply, and I'm so embarrassed I didn't know this, because I, of all people, should definitely know this. I do a lot of ancient reenactment stuff, and my husband would be ashamed of me. So Panoply is a complete suit of armor, which we have in my home, and I don't know what it's called. So my bad. Thank you, EJ, for helping fill in my my vocabulary there. I find it interesting that it talks about the albatross as with having landlocked grace. So I'm thinking an albatross when walking must be awkward because they're kind of majestic over the water. but I don't know enough about it when it's on land. So I think it's kind of the idea of it being out of its element. The love is not something that feels natural to this person who's the narrator. So turbulent takeoffs and tumultuous landings leading to the armor means, like, they've been through a lot of difficult relationships, and so they have this protected heart, and now there have been misunderstandings. And mawkish, which again I looked up because I thought it was mocking, but it's not. Mawkish is sentimental in a feeble or sickly way. So the idea of being feeble in misunderstandings, being too sentimental after having locked yourself away because of these past things. So there's a lot of intelligent thought into this very brief poem. Pam, would you like to comment?
Oh, absolutely. I have to agree. This is very intelligent. I did enjoy you learning a new word, panoply. That was awesome. This really made me think about the whole idea, and I had to agree with Emmy when she mentioned the whole idea of walking on eggshells. It really made me think of being in an emotionally abusive relationship where you have to walk on eggshells and you feel awkward because you never feel like you're going to say or do the right thing. You know, it's just a brilliant write and very well done.
Have to agree. Emmy, are you still with us, or are you fading away to bed?
Did you want me to read the next one?
If you'd like to, but don't feel pressured to.
Okay. No, I don't. I don't mind. I'd be happy to. All right. Sorry, I'm bad at leaving, I guess. So this is The Future Falls from a Clear Blue Sky by Blue Leader One. From the future to the past, from the dead, greetings. Dark clouds are forming in the east. The war drums beat and the specter of death draws nigh. I was a boy when there were bomb drills, where we would hide beneath our desks. A couple of times I wrote messages in chalk in the wood of the desk, thinking some survivor would find it and I would be remembered. I would stay up late into the dawn, watching TV. In the early morning, the station would sign off to a recitation of the poem High Flight by John Gillespie McGee. An Air Force jet would take off and soar. Sometimes I would dream I was flying. Sometimes I would never land, but I would always wake up. This future now is not so certain, for we are fortune's harlequins. We think we are the masters of the earth and our fates, and so it is. But where lies our destiny marching down crooked paths with such eager abandon, such certainty to some sunny highland paradise? How sweet that would be. Or how sweet would that be? Sorry, end poem.
Great read, thank you. And thank you for the poem, Blue Leader One. The title is quite striking, The Future Falls from a Clear Blue Sky. I always think, when I think about bombing, because the first time I really thought about it was as a child watching a movie, and it's silly because Terminator is what I think of, but I think it's Terminator 2. But there's this scene where they're at the playground, and then the bombs go, and then they kind of, disintegrate, and you're standing there looking at the playground, and it all falls apart. And I was quite young when I watched that, and I remember thinking, like, whenever there was a bomb threat thing, which sometimes happened, and we did that thing where we were hiding under our desks, then it was that I would picture that scene, and it just would, like, terrify me. And the idea that, like, a clear blue sky where it seems like there couldn't possibly be a storm, it's beautiful, and then even when it's a metaphorical clear blue sky, it seems like everything's going great, and that's when it hits you. You don't necessarily know. And, I mean, the future falling doesn't have to be a terrible thing falling. It could be, you know, something just happens out of the clear blue. You don't expect something to happen. But it's just the bomb part rattles me. And the thing is, I wasn't even in a time of war exactly. Well, I mean, I lived under an international bridge from Canada to the U.S., and around 9/11, we would have drills all the time, and people would threaten to blow up the bridge, which seemed odd because our little town was nothing happening there. But, yeah, it just, wow. Okay, sorry, I'm getting distracted because I'm just thinking about being under the desk. but in terms of the poem, I thought it was really interesting. I liked the way it said, "For we are fortune's harlequins. We think we are the masters of earth and our fates." Because we do tend to think that, like, we have more control than we actually do. Yeah, powerful poem. It's got me thinking about things. Pam, what were your thoughts?
Well, it's funny because my thoughts were similar to yours. I went back in time to the 80s to hide practicing, you know, drills like for tornadoes or earthquakes. I'm not sure exactly what we were practicing for, but yeah, where you had to like hide underneath your desk, you know. But what I like about this, I thought this was extremely hard hitting. I like how it takes a look at a childhood with the idea of war being impending or the possibility of war or even, you know, happening in the moment. And I like how it takes a look at the idea of a child's mind soaring into a dream. I was particularly drawn to the poem High, where it mentions recitation of the poem High Flight by John Gillespie McGee. An Air Force jet would take off and soar. Sometimes I would dream I was flying. Sometimes I would never land. It feels like the idea of a child who wants to escape the mundane and, you know, find that sense of self, that sense of freedom. And I really like that they threw in a poem by an actual poet into the center of their poem. You know, like a title and the idea of reading it. I thought that was really a nice touch. So it's very well done.
I like that reference as well because it makes me want to go read that poem. And, you know, poetry that inspires you to read other poetry, that's a good thing. Emmy, are you still with us?
Yeah. I guess, comment, but yeah, when I was reading it was like, I really didn't expect it to go the way it was because it seemed to really adopt like a fantasy tone. And kind of like in the third stanza, I was just thinking like, oh shit, this is like real. one of the things I also liked was sometimes I would dream I was flying and I would never land, but I would always wake up, which is sort of like a really interesting take because more often than not, there is like a landing at the end of a dream or like, you know, if you're like in a dream and you're falling from a high place, usually you hit the ground and then you wake up. It's like, that's kind of the killer of the dream at the end of the day. So that felt really clever, the way it was sort of being pushed. But I think you all did a really great job covering most of it already as well.
That's true. That jolt when you hit the ground is usually when you wake up. So the idea of not hitting the ground. I like that you pointed out that section, because it's like there's still the hope within the flying. It didn't crash down. It seems like a significant reference to the dreams, because it's unusual that you wouldn't hit the ground. Really fascinating. That was the end of the carryovers from last week, from Babbler's Contest. So from now on, it's going to be responses to my prompt, which was, stop shrinking to fit places you've outgrown. And our first entry for that is by Peter Solway. So I'll give that a read. Big As by Peter Solway. Pumpkin of bullshit, Cinderella to the ball, suitably dressed. Prince to seduced glass slipper soil, send mad all across the land. Love to fountain, farm hand in barn, God in beginning, Sam in musing. Roosters with long necks, full of mourning, Wordsworthian optimism, young and alive. Hope of moon landing, kicking up dust with cliches. Now staying long, earth of dinosaurs, novels of Stephen King. Row of secondhand things in abundance, art of now in Salvation store of the stands. Small town known for mining murderers. Waterfall of death, love renewed at length. Elephant temple closed for feast. Forever Kelly Falls, lunch at the heated pub, divine couple hereafter, toasting love, art of here and now. End poem. Well, Peter always gets me with his complicated metaphors and references. I quite enjoy the opening, the pumpkin of bullshit, Cinderella to the ball suitably dressed, because, you know, Cinderella gets her pumpkin turned into a coach, and it's all just pretend. It's the fairy dust. It's not actually a coach. She's not actually in pretty clothes. It's an illusion. So pumpkin of bullshit works for that. And prince to seduced glass slipper soil, sent mad across the land. So, you know, he had the illusion of a glass slipper and wasn't really, and then he went off looking for some girl who he didn't know. And I'm sure that the prince here is a reference to some very thought-out thing, because Peter usually has, like, a political dig in there, and I am missing it. But I guarantee you that second stanza is referencing something. I like that he brings Wordsworth into this. It's been a while since I've read Wordsworth. I need to go back and do that. Where is that thing? I really liked small town known for mining murderers. Or mining, because the way that the punctuation is, it could be mining and murderers, but it could also be that they're mining murderers and that they're creating them, that they're digging them up by having things the way that they are. I found that really interesting. Emmy, what were your thoughts?
Oh, Emmy had to go to bed.
Good night, Emmy. I know she stuck it out longer than she originally intended. Good night. Thank you for calling. But Pam, you are back just in time. Did you get to take a peek at the poem?
I did get to take a peek, and it's really intriguing to me how he mixes, you know, the idea of, you know, like fairy tales, with the mention of pumpkins and prince to seduce glass slipper, you know, the whole idea of the Cinderella, and, you know, brings in more modern things such as the mention of Stephen King. You know, it's almost like he's taking us through a history of stories made up, and how the idea of fairy tales turning into nightmares. I really like rows of secondhand things. And if I, which if I remember right, Secondhand Things, wasn't that a actual novel by Stephen King? I'm not sure. It sounds familiar.
I'm going to look it up.
It sounds familiar. Art of Now and Salvation Store of Stan's small town known for mining murders. You know, and I do like that idea, as you mentioned, of the creation of murders. I also like how this kind of takes a look to me at how boredom or, you know, can create a mind that wants to entertain itself. Really intriguing and thought-provoking imagery and metaphors, a strong look at the idea of what a society creates, and wonderful right and very well done.
Stephen King has a book called Needful Things.
Oh, okay.
That's the closest thing I can find. And it was made into a movie, apparently, in 1993. So, it was the first book after he recovered from his drug and alcohol addiction. So I haven't read that one. Interesting. It may be connected. We are fortunate to have an audio for our next one from G.A. Grimm. And here it is.
Letting Me Grow, Not Go by G.A. Grimm. Pity these clouds of the spirit as they struggle in vain to wash away these last aching heartbeats that have caused you pain. Their only success, leaving me blinded, further blurring this moment from the one imagined. If I were to stretch, reach out and touch new things, to be no longer contained by the ideas of this place, you fear that you would be discarded along with all things past, outgrown and reduced to nothing but a bittersweet memory. The earth would sooner leave the sun, for it is only because of you, my darling, I dare to grow.
Oh, I love that. That ending is so romantic, and it's just the idea of just because I'm growing and moving on doesn't mean I'm moving on from you. It's only because of you, my darling, I dare to grow. That I dare to grow is really great, and the idea that that person inspired growth is wonderful. I think for some people it can be scary when their partner or even their friends are changing and moving on to other things. If you're young and you used to go like partying all the time, then all of a sudden all your friends are having kids, settling down, and like have changed their lifestyles, then sometimes it's hard to see change. But sometimes the change is a good thing, and you can still be connected. And you know, in I don't know why my mind went there, but like the idea that he's gonna stretch and reach out to new things. And not be contained, but that doesn't mean he's going to discard the people who matter. I think that's just beautiful. Pam, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I really related to what you said because I remember I had quite a few friends that had kids at younger ages, like, you know, the early 20s, late teens, and I didn't have my first kid till I was almost 28. So, you know, even though you're happy for your friends, you know, you just can't help but, you know, be a little, you know, almost, like you said, afraid because of the changes that it means, you know, in your own life. But I like how there is, it's so, this is so touching. It's so beautiful. You know, I like that it's about personal growth, but it's also about acknowledging that person that's been there for you, whose love has encouraged you to grow, and reassuring them that you don't plan to abandon them. So beautifully written and very well done.
I agree. And I'm happy that we got another audio. George has been doing lots of audios, and I'm really happy. I think that's the fourth one that I've gotten, and the last few contests it's been there. So keep up with the audios.
Very cool. I like it.
Pam, would you please read the next one for us?
I would be happy to. All right. See here. And Outgrown by A.R. Mundell. And it goes like this. I pace about this place, a cat abound by string and wrapped around a trap, a thing wearing me thin. I barely gaze on rays or look outside a book, a detritus of my life spilling from every nook. Those layers of past days and spheres of long lost years are fading overlaid as time grows ever near. The cage of my young age now molds my older skin. It swelled to fit the well I find myself within. I stand with key in hand, but mine refuse to move, convincing me if gone, the seas will wear me smooth. My feet neglect to greet the next stage of my age, so I pace on and never turn the page. But slowly pearls unfurl of wisdom found inside. I step into the world with promise not to hide. End poem.
Great read, and I think this is a fantastic poem. I really like the descriptions that are used, such as like the detritus of my life, the idea of all the debris and kind of like all the dead material of your past being around there and you're kind of like holed up with it, hanging on to those bits that are already dead, and then those layers of past days goes really well right after that section. But the idea of that becoming your cage is sad. So realizing that it's starting to be time to move can be a difficult thing. It talks about, you know, the key in hand, and there's the difficulty, and then there's the feet. I like the way it's worded there. My feet neglect to greet the next stage of my age. The internal rhyme right there, the feet and greet and stage and age and feet neglecting to greet. I really love that line. And the inability to turn the page to the next thing. But then in the end, it's like ready to face whatever's going to be next and step out of that comfort zone of curled up in the past that's already dead. This is an exquisite poem. I love the way that it was worded and put together. Pam, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, this is absolutely beautiful. It has wonderful rhyme and flow, spot on with its meter. I, too, really enjoyed that they played with the inner rhyme as well as the end rhyme. I like how this seems to be about taking that journey of life and to adjusting to change. I particularly was drawn to the cage of my young age, now mold my older skin, it swelled to fit the well I find myself within, you know, the idea of trying to get yourself out of the trap you put yourself in, you know, finding that key. And, you know, I also like the idea of finding that wisdom, you know, as we learn and grow. So beautifully written and very well done.
I agree. Our next poem is by Daniel Deschino. It's called Beyond. Within this world I cower, only to survive. This world of me will devour what it means to be alive. So I wake into the day I rise. I walk, dressed in no disguise. I run to outwit the lies, and I fly to escape the skies. End poem. Pam, would you start to comment?
Yeah, this is an amazing brevity. It's beautifully written. I like how it seems to be about the type of growth where you go from just surviving to actually soaring. You know, I really like that. It's the idea of someone who faces their fears, and it's beautifully written all the way through. But especially, I run to outwit the lies, and I fly to escape the skies. I like that, the idea of juxtaposition of imagery. It's a beautiful and thoughtful write, and very well done.
Yes. I really liked the first stanza, especially. This world of me will devour what it means to be alive. That when sometimes when you're just in survival mode, just doing what you have to do to get by, you know, just make enough money to pay the bills, just try to be healthy enough to continue, just mentally barely making it through. I feel like these last couple of years, a lot of people have felt in survival mode, where you're doing what you have to do just to keep going until it gets better, until it feels right again. But realizing that, you know, you have to do more than that to really truly be alive, to feel alive. And then he's rising up here, dressed in no disguise, you know, being his true self, outwitting the lies, and maybe even those lies that he told himself. When you discard your disguise, it's more than just what other people think. It's, you know, seeing yourself true. I thought this was beautiful. Oh, excuse me, I'm sorry, I'm yawning, and that is not an indication to the quality of the poem. The poem was wonderful. I'm just getting sleepy. All right, one for you to read, Pam.
All right. And all right, this is Vintage by Deborah F. Thomas, and it goes like this. Must we wither in the heat, brandished by the sun, or can we flourish by the moon when daylights come undone? Should we cower in defense when fears become too dark, or can we find that ray of hope to light again a spark? Can we grow internally when hearts become too weak? Words can be our saving grace when voices grow too meek. If we stay an unplucked fruit to never be the wine, then we shall die a timely death, still clinging to the vine. End poem.
Thank you for reading. That was beautiful. I love this poem. The idea of like being able to live under the moon, even when the day is done, there's still so much more potential. to go beyond your fears and find that spark within. I really liked words can be our saving grace when voices grow too meek. And sometimes even if you feel like you can't say it out loud, you know, write it. Tell it to us in your poetry. There are so many ways that you can express yourself, and you can grow internally even as the outside world can sometimes be, oppressive, but it don't stop yourself from growing. The last stanza is my favorite, though. If we stay an unplucked fruit to never be the wine, then we shall die a timely death, still clinging to the vine. So I think this relates to, like, what Daniel was saying, the last poem of, you got to get out there. You got to be open to fully living. And, you know, it puts you a little bit vulnerable if you're out there, if you're becoming the wine, you know, the fruit is getting processed. Maybe you're meeting people, maybe you're going on adventures. You're doing things that you're not gonna last forever. But you're on the vine. You're still gonna shrivel up. You're just gonna not experience things first. I really like the fruit metaphor going there. Pam, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, first of all, wonderful comment there. You know, I like how you mentioned that, you know, there's so many ways to express ourselves. Like, if you can't express verbally, you know, write it in your poetry. And I, too, thought this was wonderful all the way through. I liked how there was that wonderful sense of hope, of conquering your fears. And to me, that first stanza, that last stanza really spoke strongly in the whole idea of the blessings of searching for and finding and fulfilling your purpose in life. And so beautifully written and very well done.
Yeah, and I'm not really familiar with Deborah Thomas's work, or maybe I am and I forget, I have a terrible memory, but I quite enjoy this. I'm going to have to follow up with some more poems. All right. Now we have one by Blue Harrison. It's called Stray. Something untangled stretches ribbon tongue, wound too long around rigid spool. Rules tumbled, and the whole ground loosens its fences. Take a wide-angle lens, view of what's next. My vow spoken 20 years before sentenced, the wild winds to moor within well-known bay. And I don't feel anything other than surrender while I shrug off yesterday. Watch the rear view make things smaller than reality. While I press the pedal firmer with my barefoot daring, eager to be astray. End poem. So to me, this feels like it's about divorce or separation, like, you know, moving on from a relationship that was no longer right. The vow was spoken 20 years ago. Before sentenced makes me feel like before it became like a prison kind of thing. The wild winds more. Shrugging off yesterday. My favorite part here is when it's talking about the rearview mirror, because that thing of like things may seem smaller than they are, or something. I can't remember. There's an expression there, but that watch the rearview make things smaller than reality. I like that because it's like everything seemed so big and overwhelming when you were in that moment, but now you're past it, and you know it. Even though they are part of you, it's no longer, you know, that huge thing that takes up your whole life. You can move on. And so realizing that, the pedal goes firmer, and eager to be astray, to be wild and not, locked into a situation. I thought this had a power to it. Like, it was the beginning of like a road trip story where let's start a new life, and it had a positive spin on what could have been a negative thing, and I liked it. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I really enjoyed and appreciated this one. I'm always a fan of Blue Harrison's writing. Strong imagery and metaphors. I too thought the same thing, that it was the idea of moving on from a relationship where you felt, you know, like you were a captive. I really like takes a wide angle lens view of what's next, you know, and the idea of looking back, you know, at the past, but also moving forward. I really like while I press the pedal firmer with my bare foot, daring, eager to be astray. And I thought astray was actually kind of a clever play on words, because, you know, with it being, you know, separate, like astray, and the idea of like a stray animal, you know, rather to be free, as you were mentioning, wild, but it also, you know, isn't a bit astray put together, a word in its own, I believe, if I remember right. And, you know, just that, to me, it really speaks so much on having the ability to choose freedom and to let go of what was trying to make you stay in that box. So beautifully written and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. We now have a poem by Luke Jr., and yeah, you took your advice, Pam, because remember how you were saying you're tired of looking up the words?
Yep.
In the AN, he explains the words that is from the title. So the title is, I'm not going to be able to say this, bear with me, Phytivorous Phytophilus. By Luke Jr., and it says in the AN, Phytivorous is feeding on plants. Phytophilus is fond of plants. Okay.
Cool.
So, gives us an idea of what's coming. Drinker, drink me. Allow yourself to shrink endless imagination. Thinker, plant me. Allow yourself to be planted inside a brain. Little thinker, you've outgrown yourself while driving me insane. There's only so much you can do without it being the same. You take the drink that should make you think outgrown. You always think that you should drink a tone. For every sense that makes you tense again, there's always one way to shrink your brain again. Drinker, drink me. Allow yourself to become Alice. Shrinker, obey me, allow yourself to become a chalice. Without the groans, within the outgrown, hold the phone, call by the name of the two names you think of, a tone. Waiting for the toneless ringtone. Drinker, drink me, allows yourself to fit into place. Outgrown thinker, unroot me, allow yourself to become rootless, a tone. Little thinker, you've outgrown your dying phone, charger alone. There's only so much you can do without it being the same. Waiting for the toneless caller ID. You take the drink that should make you think, drink. You make the words that don't always think confused. For every sense that makes you sense amused, there's always one way to shrink your brain again, 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 again. Greens, billions of plants around the world. Ah! Unroot, think, drink. Watch the world outgrow you. Waiting for the echo behind the toneless phone. Repeat to me these words after the tone. Phytivorous, Phytophilus, Phytivorous, Phytophilus. End poem. And he thanks you in the AN for the suggestion of writing the definitions.
Well, I really do honestly appreciate that he's done that. Because I know he didn't have to take that suggestion. He could have just been like, well, Pam, just continue to look it up. So I very much appreciate that.
I really enjoyed this so much. As soon as it had the drink me at the beginning, I was thinking about Alice in Wonderland. And then later on, you can tell that that was intentional because he says, allow yourself to become Alice. So I was like, yay, I wasn't crazy. I felt like vindicated that he did that. I really liked the plant yourself inside a brain to put your ideas there and have those thoughts grow. There's only so much you can do. You take the drink that should make you think. And I think this is not necessarily a drink, but it's more like you do the things that you think are going to expand your mind. You read certain books. You watch certain things, like maybe even like the news. You're hoping to like get an awareness of things. Maybe even, you know, going to school or different things where you're trying to expand your mind and you think it should make you think. But then maybe the things that you think should make you think are not the things that make you actually think. Or they, there's always one way to shrink your brain. So maybe you're looking at a narrow point of view and that's affecting you. Maybe you're, you know, damaging yourself with the drugs and drinking, and that's shrinking your brain. Maybe you're surrounding yourself with people who have all have the same opinion, so you're not actually expanding and seeing other things. I think there's different ways this could be taken, but I really like the way that it makes me think. You know, because I'm taking the drink of this poem and letting it make me think. Little thinker, you've outgrown your dying phone, charger alone. And that could partly be calling us out for, you know, spending so much time on our cell phones. Maybe if I put down my mindless games, maybe if I wasn't constantly checking my messages and, you know, living on all poetry, that then I might learn to think for myself. I like his repetition of again, 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 again. And the plants that are suffering because maybe we're not connecting with nature enough. Although there's quite the, like, revolution of cottagecore right now where it's like I find a lot of young people are very interested in plants and gardening and, like, living the simple life of you know, disconnected, off the grid type stuff. I don't know. Maybe that's just because I live in hippie land. But I feel like it's a trend right now to be more connected with nature. Anyway, I really enjoyed this poem, Luke, and wonderful vocabulary lesson. Luke, you should read the book Bloom by Kenneth Opel. Pam, what are your thoughts?
Well, I really liked your comment, and you're right. You know, this poem in itself is food for thought. I thought this had just really a strong phrasing. I liked the imagery and the metaphors, the rhyme. I liked how, you know, it was about, you know, the whole idea of rather than staying planted in that one pot, you know, give yourself room to grow. I too immediately thought of Alice in Wonderland and felt very vindicated when he did get to that part with allow yourself to become Alice. And I also, after that, it says shrinker, obey me, allow yourself to become a chalice. You know, there's a whole idea of, you know, when does obedience become a hindrance and when does obedience become a help? And, you know, I like how this takes on almost the format of a play, a conversational tone between those who are willing to let you grow and those who want you to stay in place. So excellent write and very well done.
Agreed, and I'm glad we got to do one from Luke tonight, even though the other one I'm pretty sure was the one we read yesterday. If it's not, then I'm sorry, Luke. Then we should have had a third one from you. I'm pretty sure it was the one that we just did. But I'll reread it anyway. There are two contests that I have open right now. The one for Double Helix next time has a cartoon by Awkward Yeti, which has the brain and the heart fighting over a trophy. And the trophy says, "I almost didn't completely lose it today." And the heart is crying as he holds this trophy, and he says, "I'm a fraud. I don't deserve this," because he did completely lose it today. Write whatever that inspires, thinking about yourself. We always like to have something like that digs personally into your own thoughts. And then my prompt for Part Sinner, Part Saint is, what is better, to be born good or to overcome your evil nature through great effort? Which is by the character Parthenax in Skyrim. So those are my contests that are open right now. And I just realized it's 11 o'clock, and I was thinking that was the end, and it's actually we have more time than that. Oh, Pam,
okay.
I have truly lost my mind. Well, you know
I
what, I am.
Maybe you're at the end. Oh, okay. Okay,
I mean,
well, you know.
I
was ready to cut it off early.
Well, you know, I actually that was the end of the rights from my contest, and so I thought, oh, it ended perfectly at 11. But here I am, just, it's been one of those weeks, you know.
I totally get it.
Well, yeah.
We can end the show early, but if you don't mind, I would like to plug some upcoming shows and contests.
Oh, absolutely. Plug away.
All right, so for Rhythm and Rhyme on Sunday, Rex is running a contest with four songs from Led Zeppelin, that each song is focused on the theme of myths and legends. For After Midnight, Rex is running that contest too, which is quotes from Richard Pryor. It's called Mirth or Mayhem Pryor, After Midnight. For Twisted Tuesday, Fill My Eyes is running a contest, which is has artwork. It's called Beauty from the Orient Expressed, and it has a variety of paintings and artwork that have Oriental women, lots of very beautiful fantasy style artwork that I highly recommend checking out. And I have, at this time myself, three contests running. I have, for a Twisted Tuesday, the photography of Jimmy Nelson. For After Midnight, quotes from Zelda Fitzgerald. And for Break On Through, the art of Ronit Varanda. And, of course, I always recommend that everyone check out all the contests and topic boards put up by our late night poets, hosts, and hostesses, because you're always sure to find something to inspire.
Those all sound amazing. Thank you, Pam. You are like the queen of inspiration on All Poetry. So many amazing contests. And then you're great at finding other good contests and connecting people to something that suits their interests. Bobby's been really great lately, too, Captain B2, always sending me art that she thinks will work well. And I have a lot of it saved that I haven't actually written to yet, but I'm like, I do love this. It will, at some point when I am not fried from the heat, going to write to so much art from Bobby. Yes, so I'm sorry that for some reason I was thinking that we were done at 11, and I ran... I timed it to be done at this time. So that's how many poems we have for tonight. But we're going to have awesome poems next week, I promise. And thank you so much, Pam, for filling in, as Babbler and I have had stuff going on lately. So thank you.
My pleasure. Always happy to help. And great show tonight, Faisy.
Thanks. Everyone have a good week.